Hello and welcome to the Pints and Penalties Scottish Football Podcast. I'm Rory West, and on the podcast this week, I'm joined as always by Cameron Christie.
Hello.
And Harry Tremaine.
Hello everyone.
So we're quite lucky again in the sense that we were originally planning on podcasting yesterday. We're recording on Tuesday night, but the news broke earlier this afternoon that Stephen Glass has been appointed the new manager of Aberdeen. Quite similar in the sense that a few weeks ago when McInnes was sacked, we were originally going to podcast earlier and we timed it quite well by putting the podcast back a day. So we're going to start with that. Glass coming in from the Atlanta B team. It was almost the worst kept secret in Scottish football, despite Dave Cormack trying to play it down last week in a club TV interview, saying that there's not somebody quarantining in an Aberdeen hotel, which I don't think there was, but that was the rumour that what Glass was doing. But yeah, Christy, I'll come to you first. Thoughts on the initial appointment of Stephen Glass before we get into the backroom stuff that's rumoured?
I think that we all kind of anticipated it. I think it was almost like a given that was going to happen. I've read a couple of quotes from his interview. I'll probably watch it fully after this or tomorrow. I like kind of where he's coming from. He probably has got the job a lot down to the fact that he's clearly sort of friends and knows the chairman. But from what the sort of the Aberdeen DNA, as they call it, that sort of document they released, was it last summer or 2 summers ago?
Yeah, I think it was like last April or June, maybe.
I think he meets that kind of criteria of he's clearly done really well over in the States developing young players. A lot of them have gone into the Atlanta first team, including some of them have gone on to be American sort of full US internationals. So I think that's kind of part of his thinking there as well. And I'm also kind of glad that he's gotten out of the journeyman and the kind of the running the mill guys and the also rans of management that were probably linked to this job or would have been linked to this job a couple of years ago. It's something that's a little bit different, and some sort of different ideas as well. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how it goes, and obviously I hope it goes really really well. But if it doesn't, then I think that the knives will be out quite quickly for sort of both himself and maybe for Dave Cormack as well.
Aye, from the Derek McInnes fans, not the...
Oh yeah, the people who support Derek McInnes Football Club.
Yeah, some weird, like a weird subsection of Aberdeen fans.
It's a cult.
Have come out the woodwork in the past sort of couple of days when this has been rumoured. The whole sort of Atlanta B thing, what's kind of different is a lot of people suggesting that it's Aberdeen appointing a reserve manager essentially, but that was, and there's people pointing to sort of win loss ratio or whatever at that team, and that's not really the point, I don't think, of that. His job was to sort of, as you said, develop players to play in the first team and kind of adjust them to the playing style that the Atlanta first team would like to play. There was quite a wee bit I saw on social media earlier made about how poorly he did when he took over the first team, but by all accounts he changed their style back from what De Boer was playing to what the club likes to see more. So that's an interesting aspect, but I'll move to Haz with the rumoured backroom staff of Scott Brown coming in as assistant manager. And probably the more interesting sort of as a bit of an unknown to us, I guess, the England strikers coach Alan Russell coming in as well as a first team coach. Thoughts on those additions to the backroom team?
Well, I think Alan Russell probably, well, I mean, if you're involved in the England setup, you're obviously, you know, well thought of in the game down south, which, yeah, I mean, obviously I think that's a good kind of level of experience to add to the backroom staff. However, and I'm sure there's a lot of Aberdeen fans who feel the same, Scott Brown, certainly a polarising kind of appointment. And I personally am on the side of, I think it's just a wrong sort of appointment if you're bringing him in as kind of the number two to someone like Stephen Glass, who, I want to be clear, I'm fully on board for that kind of project and the kind of change of identity at Aberdeen. I think that's what the club needs, but like too much inexperience at the top, I feel is a little bit dangerous. I understand the argument of he's won a lot of things in his playing career, and I do think that there's something he can offer from a playing side of things, because I think he probably will continue to play for a little while. But, I mean, that's obviously vastly different circumstances, and I'm not sure how well that translates. I know there are, again, a subsection. There's a lot of subsections in Aberdeen, in the Aberdeen fan base, who would say, oh, well, he'll come in and toughen up the current playing squad, but I don't really know that's how it works. I mean, the jury's still out, and I'm very intrigued to see what the kind of welcoming party looks like for Scott Brown when he is announced, as we assume he will be. But yeah, I'm certainly not convinced about that appointment.
It's one of them when it's announced that's on Twitter, you look at the mentions or quote tweets compared to the likes, and the ratio will be pretty nasty, I'm going to imagine, or expect rather. I'm on board with the Glass appointment. I think it's quite brave in the sense of he's never managed sort of a consistent time at a top club, and obviously he hasn't managed in Scotland before. It's a lot of Aberdeen supporters want something different, and it is different. To the point about Scott Brown, I'm quite interested in the sense that I agree with you. I don't sort of think he'll immediately toughen players up or whatever, but I think he could create a bit more of a mentality change in the dressing room, or he could try anyway. Whether it does work or not remains to be seen, but that's just the side of it I'm interested in. And yeah, Chris, I don't know what your sort of stance is on that side of things.
Fuck Scott Brown.
I expected that, to be fair.
Yeah, I'm just not in favour. I mean, I don't really buy the argument of the kind of he's a winner. I mean, he's kind of shown over this year he's near enough finished on the pitch, and he's not really done a lot of coaching in terms of, you might maybe have taken some sort of youth coaching with Celtic, but yeah, I'm just really, really not convinced of that. The Alan Russell coming in, I'm quite excited about that. Obviously, pretty highly rated coach, obviously working with a lot of talent in the England forward line. I was just looking through this. I mean, I have absolutely no recollection. Obviously, but I think he was at Hamilton St Mirren before, or kind of our time. I have no recollection of him coming back up and playing for Kilmarnock for 2 years.
I'd never actually heard of the guy before he joined the England setup. So.
No, neither did I. But I was just kind of having a dig, because I was thinking there. I do remember that he'd seen he'd been playing in Scotland, and I knew that he was Scottish. But I think that they're kind of relationship comes from a spell at Carolina Railhawks.
That's not real. They don't sound.
That is real.
It doesn't sound like it should be real. That's the most generic American team ever.
they've changed their name to North Carolina FC.
Oh, that makes more sense.
But yeah, it definitely was very, very American. But I'd say him being part of the setup kind of excites me a lot more than Scott Brown does. And I think the other thing with Scott Brown is the kind of financial aspect of the likelihood is that he's going to be getting paid more than any player, more than probably more than the manager himself, you know, to get him on board. And I just think that there's, for that wage, that'll be sort of freed up by McInnes leaving, and you imagine the glass is on a good bit less. The McInnes would be, I'd rather that was invested in getting in two or three quality players instead of getting in a guy who is pretty much finished.
The Northeast Railroaders or something like that. Aberdeen should rename themselves.
Well, that. Technically, they kind of have a team up here like that anyway.
Oh, the Roughnecks, isn't it? Oh, no, I'm thinking of American football.
All right. Oh, I was thinking more of sort of railway stuff. But yeah, there is the Roughnecks up here. I mean, I don't know, Aberdeen could go under some sort of full American rebrand and, I don't know, the Seagulls.
I can just picture the badge now, some sort of like human looking seagull sort of thing, whatever. But of course, yeah, that's him. I completely forgot about him. I don't even know if they still roll him out before games. Probably still have Angus de Boole try to wave up or wind up an imaginary crowd. But yeah, it's difficult to sort of say too much about Glass right now. He's obviously only been in the job a few hours, so there's no way to sort of predict what he's going to do for these last few games of the season.
I'm not sure how many he's going to be here for, because I don't think he's left yet.
Well, they were saying on Sportsound tonight that there's a chance he could be in charge for the St Johnstone game. I'd highly doubt that, or involved in some capacity, whether he's maybe from the stands or something like that.
If he left tomorrow, then yes, he would be. Like I say, I don't think he'll be there for the Dumbarton game. Dumbarton or Huntly, as it's been played, as we record. Which I don't suppose is massively concerning.
You
say that, but I really hope that nobody judges him too much on the end of this season, because I mean he's taken over a team and a squad of players that's probably the lowest I think the feeling in the club is the lowest it's been for about 10 years. That includes sort of utter guff under Craig Brown. I think that the feeling amongst the support and probably the playing squad is definitely lower than that at the minute. So he's got a big job to pick them up and get going for the rest of the season. Hopefully tries to implement some things, make some changes, give some players some chances, decide who he wants to keep, who he wants to bin, and then gets really well backed in the summer to sort of build a squad and around the way he wants to play football.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting. I don't know if you have anything you want to add before we move on, Haz.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, a lot of the statement focuses around the kind of footballing philosophy side of things, and that is kind of the change that a lot of the fan base probably want to see, and certainly I want to see as well. Obviously, there must have been conversations about that. Dave Cormack must think that Stephen Glass has the capacity, has the kind of desire to make those changes. So I think that from that side of things, I'm very excited. I obviously recognise that there's a lot of potential pitfalls with this, but I'm looking forward to something different and a new era at Aberdeen, and whatever the kingpin wants, I'm all on board with.
Yeah. I'm buying into it, authority
definitely.
Used to say. Is that what they said? I can't remember. That's like a.
On what was that on?
The authority and Triple H and all that. It almost gives you PTSD.
Seth Rollins used to say, "I didn't sell out. I bought
it." Yeah, that's it. That's it. Well, I mean, we can't really sell out to Cormac, whatever. But anyway,
we could. If Mr. Cormack wants to make a bid for this show, then we'd maybe welcome it.
Take it off our hands, Dave, or Kingpin, rather. Anyway, we'll shift on to the weekend, where there was a battle for the final top six place between the two Saints, which St Johnstone came out on top. On goal difference after their 1-0 win over Ross County and St Mirren drawing 1-1 with Hamilton. We'll start with St Johnstone, obviously, the side that reached the top six, and it's just kind of highlights another impressive achievement from Callum Davidson in his first season as manager after winning the League Cup. They've probably, I can't remember, someone struggled to find like tables as it stood or whatever. I'm sure they were bottom in about October, November time anyway, but I can't imagine St Johnstone have spent too much time in the top six this season. But they've managed to pick up a decent run of form since the start of 2021. And I think, could you say it's deserved? I think for the work they've put in this season, been relatively consistent, I wouldn't say it's an undeserved rather than being deserved, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think the main thing that you can say with St Johnstone is progress. He's stuck to his guns in terms of the style and the overall, you know, kind of, yeah, philosophy. Again, you're coming back to philosophy. He's kind of stuck to his guns on that throughout the season. And I certainly was a bit sceptical right at the start of the season. And it did look at times, as you kind of mentioned, they were either bottom or kind of swithering around there. But yeah, I mean, he's stuck to it, and the team has progressed. He's kind of learned a little bit more about his players, what they are and aren't capable of, brought in the odd player here and there to just kind of, yeah, to be able to unlock certain parts of the tactic that he's looking to do so. And yeah, it's got better as the season's gone on. I think, as you said, from the turn of the year, the form has been dramatically better. They've been a lot harder to beat than they were previously, and actually are probably a little bit more functional going forward as well. So yeah, I think as well you've got to remember that this is his first season in management, so to win a trophy and finish top six with St Johnstone, where that's certainly not a given at the moment, I think that's a fantastic season, a really good achievement.
Yeah, and given what's kind of happened in the last month or so with St Mirren and Goodwin's new contract, I'd probably, and some of the business they've done throughout both windows, I'd probably imagine St Mirren have a bigger budget than St Johnstone too. I couldn't really predict how the budgets would lie outside of, or where St Johnstone would kind of lie and how big their budgets are in the division, but I would imagine it's in the bottom six, so by that basis it's probably a good achievement, and if it's not bottom six, I imagine it's probably in and around sixth anyway. But to the game on Saturday, what did you make of that, Christy, against Ross County?
Much the better side. Nearly kind of spoke about it before we came on. I mean, Ross County was really, really off it. Whether or not that's just the case of St Johnstone, I mean, I don't see why Ross County shouldn't have been given, but you know, where they are in the division, whether St Johnstone sort of went all for broke, and they'll find well that they needed to win, regardless of sort of what happened elsewhere. Although they're obviously relying on results elsewhere, but they needed to win. It's all they could do. But yeah, I mean, this is Harry Mayer about St Johnstone. I mean, it's arguably the, I wouldn't say because obviously it was a first trophy in the Scottish Cup, I wouldn't say it was better than the 2013-14 season, but it's probably their second best season in the history of the club. I mean, as you said there, how much time they actually spent in the top six, can you guess how many weeks they spent in the top six prior to the sort of the split?
I'm going to guess, by the wee laugh, that it's zero.
One. Week seven. Game week seven was the only time, and they were sixth place, it's the only time that they've been in the top six all season. Because I think, well, we went through a phase where Dundee United were there for about half the season somehow. But I mean, it's St Johnstone just really, really dominated the game, created all the chances. This is possibly a little unlucky not to get a penalty. There's sort of a push and then a handball. I think the push would have been really soft. But yeah, potentially unlucky. There's another handball as well. there. But yeah, I mean, Ross County, I know we're focusing on Johnston, but Ross County, they created absolutely nothing. And I don't know if that's, that could perhaps be testament to sort of how well St Johnston have been defending of late. We've obviously given them a lot of praise for that kind of the back five they've got, especially the central three of Carr, Gordon and McCart. But I mean, it would have almost been a crying shame if St Johnston hadn't won this game. And I think it's a testament to sort of their ability to not drop off hugely when some players drop out. I mean, you know, they ended up with two sort of subs combining to get themselves goals in Middleton and Stevie May. So I think that they've got, obviously this is about the back line, they've got a fairly strong sort of set in their way a lot there, but ahead of that they've got kind of a revolving cast of players that they can rely on, and I think that that's been key to them never really been absolutely terrible. I know they've gone on loads of winless runs, but it's been often off the back of good winning runs, and they've always sort of, they've gone 8 unbeaten, and now they've gone 8 without a win. You know, they've never, it's always been a little bit streaky, but you've never been massive. I don't think we've ever been massively winning for them, and it's a testament to this. It's a testament to Callum Davidson for sticking by his guns with his setup. And eventually getting that top six spot, which solidifies them. Regardless of what happens now, I'd imagine that possibly St Mirren and Dundee United will finish obviously with more points than them. But you know what a season that they've had again this year. I mean, I think it's a ridiculous run that they've been on of top six finishes in the last decade. And for a club who, let's be honest, there's plenty who are outspending them, and for them to have done that and won two trophies in that period of time is, you know, quite a type it must be to be a St Johnston fan, given the history of the club.
Yeah, it's 3 wins in the last 4, with 4 unbeaten, so it's a perfect time to come into a decent run of form. What I was quite impressed with on Saturday was just the commitment that they showed to keep pursuing that goal, probably unaware of results elsewhere. And you know, at times you could have just given in and thought, right, it's just not happening for us today. But I thought the subs of Middleton and May made a decent impact for them, and May's channel runs caused County's back three all sorts of problems. But I think at times it wouldn't really take an awful lot to cause guys like Donaldson and Keith Watson problems. Pretty prone to errors. I was really impressed with Middleton's turn and finish as well for the goal, especially after he missed a fairly decent chance with a one-on-one with the keeper earlier on. So yeah, I was impressed with that.
He almost get kicked on his way through there.
Yeah. But yeah, as we said, we don't really focus too much on Ross County here. But what I don't think made too much sense is that St Johnstone have been playing this 3-4-3 or variation of it anyway most of the season. Pretty familiar with it. Ross County decided to match them up, and that was never ever going to end well. I don't think Ross County have played up too often this season. I think when they have, it hasn't gone awfully well. So tactical genius John Hughes at it again. But yeah, I don't think there's an awful lot to play for in terms of European places now for top six, but St Johnston could easily be a tricky opponent if it came down, or push came to shove or whatever. So, and obviously the top six money probably will help them. So, fair play.
I think I was just going to say as well, I think that this is a good showcase of Davidson's probably learned quite a lot in this season in terms of substitutes and how to get the best out of them, because as you mentioned there, Middleton looked really impressive, and he was kind of playing basically up top with Stevie May at times. Like he came central an awful lot. The two chances that he has, the goal and the one you referenced where he misses, he's very central, and got plenty of pace to offer, as you saw. I mean, he absolutely glides past Keith Watson, who, yeah, a how he tries to cynically take him down. But yeah, I mean, it offered St Johnstone something different, and it's not something that Glenn Middleton's done an awful lot this season. I don't think he's had too much impact really, but yeah, I think that was really astute by Davidson to kind of affect the Ross County backline in a different way to how they had been approaching it previous.
Mm. Okay, we'll move on to St Mirren now. Christy, I'm going to predict that you have something to say about St Mirren and maybe their chief exec.
Yeah, he should probably stop running his mouth every start of every season. I mean, it's becoming embarrassing because he's basically... Okay, this year, admittedly, they should have got that. I think they should have got that, what we claim. But he's just embarrassing himself every year. And if you notice, like, it kind of went from, oh, we could finish, we could... Wasn't it 1 year he maybe even said he could challenge for the league?
Aye, so he said in 2016, I think, by 2019, St Mirren could be challenging for the title.
So is that in 2018-19 season where they finished second bottom and stayed up because Dundee United are terrible in penalties?
That'll be the one.
Yeah, I thought so. So it ended up going to, we could win the title too. We could get the European places too. We can get the top six. So I'll be interested to see what comes next. This is such a massive missed opportunity for St Mirren. I feel you could argue that this 2021 has been because obviously the semi-final against Livingston where they really didn't turn up, and then chucking away a spot in the top six, which would have been, I think, the highest league finish for over 30 years, and the only time they've actually would have made the top six since it was put into play. But it's the manner of throwing it away. It's conceding such a cheap late set piece goal. It's just really, really poor. That should be something that they should be seeing out, and to not do it into really, really disappoint. It's not a great look at all.
I was just looking through their run of form there, and it's one win in 8, I think they've got now, and there's 5 draws in there. So fine, that's a few points picked up here and there. But yeah, I just to your point there about the League Cup semi final. This is, I think if you offered St Mirren top six before or at the start of the season, they would have obviously taken it. But now this is two pretty big games. They would have known going into this game if they won, they would have got it. So essentially must win. So if you put into this with the League Cup semi-final, where they've just totally haven't done themselves justice in sort of performances that they've put in at other points of the season, when you look at the wins over Celtic and Rangers, and at Aberdeen as well. I just... It's still early in what the second season of Goodwin, so he did well to get them to the semi-final, and I guess to the point of top six, so there won't be any pressure of any sort on him, especially given the new contract. But that's two pretty important games where they've just totally, would you say, bottled it? I don't know. It's something that would really frustrate me if I was a St Mirren supporter, because they could have easily won that game on Saturday. They had so many chances, and the fact as well that the goal comes from a penalty. They couldn't break Aki's down from open play, and in the end it has ultimately cost them the 3 points. So
it is in that context it kind of is as you said, them bottling the game, which is unfortunate obviously, but I mean that comes down to a lot of things. I mean, it's a lack of ruthlessness in terms of the finishing for the entire season has been lacking at times. They're not exactly a prolific attacking outfit. Motherwell has scored more than them, Killy have scored more than them, even Hamilton have scored more goals than them this season. So that's something that's seriously lacking. And also, it's, I mean, the foul for the equaliser is just pretty silly stuff. You know, Hamlin played back to goal. Yeah, you're entitled to challenge, but you've just absolutely clambered all over him, giving them an opportunity to sling the ball in the box. And that's what Hamlin have done for the entire season. They've been most dangerous from set pieces. And it's terrible defending from that set piece as well. So, yeah, it's pretty naive stuff in the end. And that's a massive learning experience, I'm sure, for Jim Goodwin. The one thing I would say is, and also I was going to say, I mean, the comments of the chief executive, I wonder how much that plays into kind of the feeling of the players, like, on the pitch, knowing that, oh, well, you know, we've had this big talk about getting top six. It's been the narrative in the media, like, the entire season surrounding St. Mirren. Like, does that affect them? Like, are they more nervous? Does it kind of get to them more? But what I would say is, regardless of any of that, I think that they probably will end up finishing best of the best of the bottom six in seventh place. And if they do that, regardless of the opportunities they've let slip, which obviously they'll be very disappointed about, I mean, it's still pretty significant progress, I think, this season for St. Mirren.
I think to the point about the comments there, and I think the free kick's quite soft for the goal, but it's quite rash from Shaughnessy. It's a challenge of someone who looks pretty desperate to win the ball, and it's almost as if he's thinking, God, I need to win this header. We can't sort of let this lead slip away. But, yeah, the point about the set pieces, if you're going to sort of give away something so cheap to a side that in fairness are pretty decent at capitalising from set pieces, it's just, the marking is pretty unforgivable, really.
they're genuinely not even, the guy, the guy that scores McMahon, they're not even picking him up. No one's picking him up. Sorry, Monroe, sorry. And no one's even picking him up. I thought he'd spin away. I think it's Fraser who's kind of deeper than everyone. I thought he'd spun away from him originally, and I've just watched it back a couple of times, and nobody at any stage has picked him up. It's quite incredible. I mean, Erhon is there. I don't know. He's maybe trying to block some sort of space, but he doesn't do anything. There's no point in him even being where he is, whereas he could have been in there to pick up a man. It's so basic and so poor, and especially as late on as that. And a game with such, you know, high stakes, it's so disappointing. But I mean, like you say, I mean, I think for St Mirren, since they've come up, they've basically just been embroiled in relegation trouble. For as long as I can remember St Mirren being a top flight club, they've basically just been involved in relegation trouble. And at least for this year, they're pretty much safe. I mean, let's be honest, they're not going to get relegated. They're pretty much good. So I think a boring bottom six, bottom six at the end of the season, they might take. It might allow Jim Goodwin to experiment with things, maybe try out some things to get them a couple more goals, to be a bit more offensive. But, I mean, like we said before, they don't really have a clinical goal scorer and a clinical player, with the exception of... Now, I don't... It's annoying me because it's really bad, but I've totally blanked on it. So Jamie McGrath, almost blanked on his name there. With the exception of him, and I know some of his are penalties as well, but I think that guys like Jim Goodwin maybe should be looking to experiment a little bit in the bottom six run. And look to make a couple of changes, maybe try some things with tactics and players, because, I mean, they're not going to get dragged into it in the seasons for them, with the exception of the Scottish Cup season, but league-wise, it's pretty much done.
Yeah, I guess it's all about some building up momentum for the Cup, I guess, but away to Hamilton in that, so a bit of revenge, you never know. See how that one goes. But we'll move on Sticking in the bottom six, though, with Kilmarnock, who picked up a 4-1 win over Motherwell. Now, we've not really talked about Kilmarnock in a while. I think we were going to a couple of weeks ago, then Derek McInnes went and got himself sacked, so we had to shift that for a few weeks. But I guess, thankfully, we did manage to catch them in a week where they've picked up their first win in 11, and a pretty decent win at that. Four goals and a couple of fairly decent goals. The fourth one from Pinnock is that as good a finish as you'll probably see in Scotland at the weekend. So I was pretty impressed by Killy. They finally looked like they got themselves going under Tommy Wright. There's still a few things that I'd imagine he'd like to iron out. Above the goal that Motherwell scored, they did concede a few chances, but yeah, I think they deserve to win. Haz, I'll come to you. That sort of, you always have your soft spot for Killy. What did you make of their win at the weekend?
Yeah, well, it's weird that Tommy Wright is not an offensive-minded manager by any means, or that's not how he's perceived, but this is the most dangerous Killy have looked all season. And I think that the reason for that is, we were kind of speaking about this before the podcast, and I think it's getting Kyle Lafferty fit and kind of surrounding him with players who are on his wavelength, can run in behind, are dangerous off of the wings, because, you know, he's prepared to drop in and link up. And he does that throughout this game, and that's quite often how they create their chances, is him kind of dropping in, creating space for the wingers to run into. And Pinnock, obviously, as you said, scores a great goal off the back of that. But yeah, I think it's that they've found a nice blend at the top end of the pitch, because, again, we discussed this before, they're not particularly terrible at the back. It's just been... and I've used the word so many times, they've been workmanlike. They've lacked a bit of spark up front. But yeah, I think Lafferty is that player, and as it's turning out, he seems to be a very good pickup for them. Although what I would say is Motherwell was probably the ideal game for this Killy team.
Yeah, not a great performance from them. I did say kind of before we recorded, not sure if we should be getting too ahead of ourselves just yet, because it is just their first win in 11 games, but it's so important given that Hamilton obviously dropped points, and now that lifts them into 11th, just 1 point off of Ross County, who are sat in 10th, which would drag them out of the relegation zone completely. But it's going to be interesting how they cope in the bottom six. They've got three of the five games are at home, and they've picked up 18 of their 28 points so far this season at home, and two of those home games are against Dunne United and Ross County, who they've already beaten at home. So a repeat of that should, and I guess avoiding defeats elsewhere, and would probably be enough, you'd imagine, because at the rate they're going, I can't really see Ross County picking up too many points. But it's so, that run for Killy was brutal, and they're in a situation now where it's so crucial that they don't fall into one of those again.
Absolutely. The thing is, this is the first win in a good while, and a generally good performance. Like you say, we shouldn't be getting ahead of ourselves. They were still at times opened up at the defensively. Perhaps Motherwell should have had a penalty a couple of times. They struggled defending things at set pieces, especially when Motherwell tried something a little bit different instead of slinging it in into the box. They struggled to kind of react to that across it from the sort of the cross that eventually comes in. And to be fair, Motherwell did gift them a couple. Like you said, the first goal with Kelly sort of letting it go through him. Not only that, I mean, Ricky Lammy's defending up against Kyle Lafferty is really poor, way too standoffish. Shouldn't be letting him
letting him turn there. And it was just some of a disaster. Just not enough pressure on the ball, putting in poor challenges, missing interceptions. To be fair, some fantastic finishes, like we were saying about Mitch Pinnock. I'm a huge fan of that Rory McKenzie goal, when he's just able to touch it past Liam Kelly and then eventually get his put in the net. But it's, I know we weren't maybe going to, this is more focused on Kilmarnock, but I mean, Motherwell either seem to be on it or miles off it, sort of in the last month or so. They were excellent the other week in the win, but here it was back to similar performances like they had against St Johnston and Hamilton. Just really, really poor.
Anything else to add on Killy? I guess it's just we're going to more focus on them after a few games in the bottom six and see how they react to this win, I guess. But yeah, anything final to add before we move on?
I think the only thing I would say is that I don't see Tommy Wright as a guy who takes things on a game-by-game basis in terms of his overall approach. So I think, I mean, that kind of suits them. They seem to have found a good formula, a good kind of solution within their squad. So I think if they stick with this, they've got more than a puncher's chance of kind of even avoiding the playoff position. I think they've got the most quality of those three teams that are really in the mix at the moment.
There's no doubt they've got the most quality in their squad of the kind of three teams we're talking about in County and Accies. Still worry a little bit, like I said, about them defensively. I don't think it's a particularly strong back line. Kurt Broadfoot's obviously never getting any younger. Not being really impressed with Zach Medley to date, and the fullback still leave a bit to be desired. And Hornstrup, and
don't talk bad about Zach. He's a good man.
he's Arsenal, isn't he?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm not entirely convinced because he obviously
small club mentality.
He gifted the goal away against the recently.
I don't care about it. He's one of Mikel's gooners, so don't be criticising him on my watch.
Was it Ross County? I can't remember. Anyway, and to be fair, he did slice a clearance in the build up to the Motherwell goal here. But yeah, not massive fan of him, and Christ, the goalkeeper's not great, but they now have possibly a talisman that they can look to in Lafferty. Like you said, I think they just have better players than the other two clubs there, and probably a better manager as well. So don't want to get too carried away, but I do still think that they are probably the favourites to just keep their head above the water in terms of sort of getting that 10th spot, which I'm sure any Kilmarnock fan and any Kilmarnock player will probably rip your hand off for right now.
Has. Give it up. Your man's shit. So,
look, that's completely unprofessional, Rory.
Right. Okay, well, talking of unprofessional, we'll stick with you, Haz. As we move on to the lower leagues, we're just looking at one game from each of the three lower divisions this week. Haz, you've got the championship. Where did you go for this week?
Yeah, I could have gone for a couple in the league. I think a decent point for Raith away at Ayr and a good win for Inverness away at Dunfermline, but I've actually gone for Morton versus Queen of the South, which is a bit of an odd game maybe. Queen of the South sort of mid-table and Morton, well, battling for their lives I think in the championship, but a big win for Morton, and I think that probably the standout and the reason I've gone for this is a very rare goal direct from a corner by I believe it's Aidan Nesbitt for Morton. And one of the things I most enjoyed about it was the gif tweeted out by the Morton Twitter account of him throwing up the horns. Enjoyed that. He's got a decent trim there, and I mean it's maybe a dodgy hairline, but respect to Aidan Nesbitt. I think, I mean, a pretty competitive game by the looks of the stats, although Queen of the South's goal comes from a really good strike from range by Obalai. He sort of just picks it up from about 25 yards, shifts it onto his right foot, and it's, you know, kind of a bouncing shot into the left-hand side of the net. Pretty decent. And then Morton grab a winner with a decent stabbed cross to the back post, and Gary Oliver heads home. So big win for Morton, kind of takes them, well, takes them now 8 points clear of bottom place Alloa and three ahead of Arbroath in ninth. So yeah, could be very important for Morton in terms of, you know, long term survival in the league. But obviously, there's plenty of distance to go.
It's just the mad nature of that league is that they are only, 4 points off of the playoffs? No, 5 points rather.
Five. 5 points. So, although they have played a game more than, Dundee and Raith.
It is Dundee though, so you never know what you're going to get from them. It's going to be interesting how that one plays out. I'm really not sure how or where I would go, to be honest, in terms of sort of how the playoff picture is going to end up. But definitely an important win for Morton at the weekend. Christy, we'll shift to you in League One. Where did you pitch up?
So I went for to look at Peterhead against Airdrieonians. I think maybe not the one that grabbed the headlines in League One at the weekend. I think that was probably for Dumbarton for that comical own goal.
All the wrong reasons.
Exactly. Is it the worst own goal I've seen? I'm still not sure it's beaten the guy who overhead kicked it off his own face. I know if it's not an own goal, I would probably just put it above Darren Mackey against Kilmarnock, just because of the way that the goalkeeper kind of tries to scramble to claw back out of the net. But yeah, so 1-0 for Peterhead at home against Airdrie. The big turning point in the game was Kyle Turner on his debut for Airdrie. Obviously, fairly highly rated from his time at Stranraer, being kind of in and out of the team at Dunfermline, and given an opportunity to come to Airdrie on loan. There was obviously he'll be a great signing. 4 minutes in, sent off. Ridiculous challenge, it must be said. It's a fairly nothing situation, and he just goes in way too high, way too aggressively, and rightly sent off. But to be fair, from watching the highlights, Airdrie still offered a bit of attacking threat. I think at one point they hit the bar. Maybe unlucky not to get a penalty as well. But you could see from some of the sort of the times where they had counter attacks towards the end of the game, and the sort of the pace that they were carried out with, that they definitely tired. I mean, when you've not played for well over 2 months, and you've been reduced to 10 men after less than 5 minutes, that's bound to happen. But I mean, fair enough. I think that a draw probably would have been the correct result. I mean, even the goal for Peterhead, some questionable goalkeeping there. But I would say probably an unexpected win for Peterhead. I mean, I know that the Airdrie are kind of that sort of hybrid of there is some full time players or some part time players. Most of the time, I would have predicted obviously for an Airdrie win, but the big turning point obviously being that red card for Kyle Turner.
Spotting that Si Ferry didn't play. So what's wrong with him?
He did not play.
Is he on the bench?
I'm curious as so how many what's the most common surname on the pitch, because obviously Peterhead have three Browns, Scott Brown, who I think might
I don't know if he still is. He was the captain, sort of ex and Johnston, and obviously brothers Jordan and Jason Brown. Jason Brown's not recently sort of joined from Cove Rangers when he was kind of freed to get some more game time, and you know he's sort of taking advantage of that with scoring the goal. But one thing I've noticed a lot with obviously with League One and League Two coming back, and I presume you guys will have as well, is the amount of loan signings from below the SPFL. There's obviously been a lot of them happening. I think probably the more high profile ones are guys like Chris Erskine going back to Partick Thistle again. But obviously with this sort of no games, Hamish Ritchie's joined Peterhead. Didn't really get an awful lot of a chance at Cove. He's gone on from locals. Never played. Actually played against him a couple of times. He used to be Aberdeen.
Really good
player. but no, he's a really, really good player. So hopefully he can get a bit more opportunity in that Peterhead team than he did at Cove.
How did Thomas Robert get on? Did he do anything?
I didn't notice an awful lot. He may have been the problem is, right, I was, while speaking about this, I was having the highlights on from Airdrie's TV, because I struggled with the Peterhead one. The problem with Airdrie TV is you cannot, or just the version that I've got, you can't actually, you can't, all you need to use the arrow, that's what it is. As I say, there's no actual option to like drag along to get to bits and go back, but you need to use the arrows and the keyboard, which is a bit of a pain in the arse. But never mind.
54 minutes.
He did get subbed. But again, I mean, if you look at it, it was probably made a bit more difficult for them. They probably needed to get some fresher legs in the middle of the park after Turner was sent off. Makes sense. Obviously he's really highly rated. I've seen the odd goal from him that's cropped up. I've never actually seen too much other than that, but it still astounds me that he's actually any good.
it shouldn't happen.
Well, because obviously there was all that talk about him sort of rejecting moves from France, from professional clubs in Scotland, to go and sign for Airdrie. You're like, really?
He's one of Europe's best prospects.
Well,
what's he like on MSN?
Is that not
always
sure?
Have any of you ever came across him a few years deep in FM? Whether he actually turns out any good?
Does he end up?
No, I don't. I was actually asking. I've never seen him become any good.
I don't think I've gone deep enough in this FM to know. But obviously, there's the rumours of linking him with Celtic don't seem to be going away anytime soon. But for me, from being pretty decent at Airdrie to go and go into that Celtic team seems an absolutely monumental task.
Poor one for Airdrie, but decent result for Peterhead. Okay, to finish off, I chose in League 2, Queen's Park 3, Stranraer 0. Partly for the sort of historic reason almost that it was, could be anyway, Queen's Park's last league game at their home stadium of Hampden before they moved to Lesser Hampden. Now it's came up, there's complications with Lesser Hampden, so they might be trying to extend their lease or ground share with, I think it's Clyde, or did you say Airdrie as well before?
Airdrie was the one, cause I think it was the ground share with Airdrie when Hampden was getting sort of redone for the Commonwealth Games.
But either way, it's a pretty big moment for them after going full time, getting their own place. But it was a pretty comfortable win for them. Took the lead through Michael Doyle, scored a looping header from the back post. Keeper's positioning is pretty suspect to say the least. But decent ball in from Simon Murray, who was just kind of, in a good way, a pest through this game. Just coming in off the left, shooting all the time, not really too much success, but putting a power of work. So I guess he's putting in a shift down that level. Doubled the lead pretty early on as well through Lee Kildea. It was a decent crossing from Luca Connell, who's on loan from Celtic, and he's one that's got mad potential in FM, isn't he? Or he might have been FM 20, where he...
I think so. Seems strange he's ended up there, because obviously coming but relatively highly rated from Bolton, and we barely see him in the first team, and he's sort of punted out to League Two Queen's Park.
Was it him that came... I'm not sure if there was three, and Frimpong was one of them, but he came with some other guy, a centre-half, O'Connor, maybe? And one was from, I'm getting mixed up here, but whether Connell came on his own or whether this guy came with him or the guy I'm forgotten about came with Frimpong. But yeah, he looked a class above, to be fair, at down in League Two. Should be pretty a decent sort of run out for him for the rest of the season, because I can't really see Queen's Park dropping off from top spot. I think they're 5 clear of second now, and they're 10 clear of fifth, so they're all good for at least the playoffs. But despite the 2-goal lead, it was pretty scrappy in the first half. They got a penalty midway through the second half to make it 3-0. Just if there was ever a clumsy challenge that looked like it was made by a rusty player who's not played in months, this was it. A fairly sort of basic bit of skill from David Gall to get away from his man, and goes down. Bob McHugh dispatches a penalty, no problem. So really comfy win for Queen's Park. I noted that they seem pretty keen on playing out from the back, and I was telling you guys before we came on that Willie Muir in goal is clearly instructed to get in on that too, and I don't think he's the most capable with the ball at his feet. There's twice in the game, and there's one specific occasion where Daryl Duffy was pretty close to snatching the ball off him, which would have resulted in an open goal for Duffy to shoot into. So not sure whether Ray McKinnon should be sticking with that one, but the defenders were fairly comfortable at it. But so that's fine enough, I guess. But yeah, Connell impressed. Ross McLean was pretty impressive too, as well as David Gall. Dangerous down the left through most of the game. But yeah, comfy win for Queen's Park, and they're looking good for promotion now. I can't really see anyone catching them. So yeah, it's probably more down to the playoff picture for some excitement in League Two now. Is there any word whether the pyramid's working? Or
no. I don't think so. I think that Brechin will be safe, or Albion Rovers, or whoever finishes bottom, will be safe for another year.
4 points so far for Brechin.
What's that?
4 points so far for Brechin, 1 win, 1 draw. Great.
And Albion Rovers aren't in a much better position.
Nah, 6 for that. So, but
not too much better. But I think that. For these leagues, obviously, if they do a split, I think that'll be the intriguing one again. I think there's a better competition for both that and League One and League Two, between Stenhouse Muir and probably Elgin, Stranraer, Edinburgh, and then you've got Partick Thistle, East Fife, Cove, Airdrie, Montrose, sort of fighting out to get into the top half for the playoff positions. I'm looking forward to how it all folds out. I think we could see some teams out on their feet, really, especially someone like Clyde, who I think for the next few weeks could be playing Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturdays, which is, you know, that's bound to catch up with them eventually. I think that the teams who've got the most games to play might eventually begin to struggle and might suffer with injuries and just general fatigue.
What I'm hoping for from League Two is either Elgin get into the playoffs and collapse massively, or they're within touching distance on the last day and massively fuck it up somehow. So,
here, mate.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't go for them, actually.
I didn't want to talk about them, that's why. other than I didn't want to talk about them other than burying them, so
yeah, fair enough.
There we go. Although they did get beat, so that would have been quite funny. But anyway, I wanted to go down the historic route with Queen's Park, so there we go. We'll be back probably at some point next week. Oh,
can we just say, before we forget about talking about next week, Heart of Midlothian Football Club.
Well, I guess we've got a few more minutes where we can kind of extend into here, and this is just as the game is finished as we're recording. Hearts has been beaten by Bro Rangers, who haven't played a game in what? I haven't trained since, in months. Well, yeah, since World War II, according to our group chat. How the hell does Nielsen get back from that? I don't think he gets sacked, but given the position Hearts are in, or how far they are at the top of the league, they're probably in no danger of losing that. And every time I've seen Hearts this season, they've been so unimpressive, other than and I think the only time they've been on telly and I've not watched them was the Dundee game where they won, what was it, 6-2?
Oh, they were quite good there, but I've watched a couple of the times since, and I mean, even the week after against Arbroath, they were terrible. I actually thought they were relatively good in the games in the Scottish Cup, but I mean, the league games you've watched them in this year.
I'll forgive you that. They were good in the cup games, but
the league games have been rubbish.
Just that's an astounding result. You could have almost said that, right, the league is easily wrapped up. Let's try and make a run for the Scottish Cup. But oh God, this.
I can't remember too many cup upsets bigger than that.
I can't, in the past, what, say like 10 years, I can't think of anything bigger than that. That's just...
Yeah, absolutely not.
Not given circumstances of obviously Brora not having played in 2 months. To be fair, they've barely played all year. The Ireland League didn't get started playing until into November. So they've barely played all year, and then they've, Hearts have turned up the road and... you just need to look at the players. I mean, I know we've kind of slagged them off, but I mean, that group of players should be beating Brora Rangers.
The fact as well that Brora went 1-0 up after about 12 minutes, and it took to the 70th minute for Hearts to equalise.
It's a Christoph Berra goal, so it's likely, I've not watched their anything, so it's likely from a set piece.
Yeah, so... And yeah, the team they've got out is just, there's no way that they should be losing that game.
Shouldn't even be a competitive game.
No, I mean, like, no.
Let alone losing it. Like, whoa, that's, of course they're winning their league very handily. They'll easily go up as champions no matter what happens, basically. But, yeah, I think for a large part of the fan base, they'll be hoping for heads to roll tomorrow morning, probably.
I'd imagine.
I think you need to look at the rest of the season. I think he's got to struggle to come back from that, but even if he gets him promoted, you've probably got to look at someone else. I think the Nielsen magic, if you want to put it that way, it seems to have gone. I mean, they were never great to watch in the first spell, but they were effective and they got results. Even in the Championship, they've drawn so many games this year. It's just turgid football. I even would say some sort of uninspired signings, like guys like Mackay Stevens been rubbish since he joined. I mean, Andy Halliday's crap as well.
Well, will he be saying on his podcast, I guess?
He wasn't there, so...
he didn't play, I don't think.
He was probably watching, some Rangers 35 video instead.
Yeah, or probably at some sort of event, on this, some Zoom event celebrating. He wasn't even in the squad, so where the hell is he?
Maybe pretending he played for Man United as a youth player about 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's... I think he should be sacked for that, to be honest. That's
absolutely. You don't come back from that, in my opinion. I mean, that's possibly the worst result. I actually don't know too much about sort of like Hearts' history with cup results, but there's nothing that comes to mind that is worse than that I can remember in my lifetime. I think that is the worst result in the club's almost in the club's history.
Imagine going from
It's interesting that we almost had two of them in one night, because Bucky, I mean, it's still playing as we speak, but they've ran Inverness very close tonight as well to get an 86-minute goal to put Inverness back in the lead.
Imagine going from runners up to getting knocked out from a non-league side. That's just it's crazy going. But I think. We'll finish things up there. So obviously the international break coming up. So it's weird now that international breaks aren't just bleak weekends nowadays. Somewhat looking forward to the games.
I'm looking forward to the first game. I'm not looking forward to the Sunday night game against Israel, because I'd rather gouge my own eyes out than watching another one of those games again. And Faroe Islands are a better team than they previously have been. So they're no pushovers anymore, forgetting that Bertie Volkes' Scotland team drew them 2-2 after being 2-0 down. So they're better than they were then, but hopefully we are as well. I'd hope it's a relatively comfortable one. But I think a tough game against Austria, inevitably a horror show, or at least in terms of actually trying to watch it against Israel, and hopefully Faroe's 7 points. I'm going with an optimistic 7 points.
Hopefully then, Jamesy, if you've made it this far, that Che Adams bags a few goals just to wind you up, you asshole. Yeah, big prick.
Delighted that after our podcast where you suggested he potentially could accept the call up, he immediately did the next day. So that's a massive boost for us. But yeah, hopefully he can hit the ground running for us.
Apparently, it's not. He rejected us once.
Well, yeah. If you ask. Maka, he'd probably tell you otherwise, but I mean, in my opinion, I think that's a great get for Scotland.
But anyway, that'll do for tonight. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.